Hello and welcome to this episode of Chronicles, where today we're going to be talking all about The Wasteland by T.S. Eliot. I was just quite conscious of the fact that for all of the Chronicles stacking up now, we've never really had one that has just been a pure poem. We've obviously had epic poetry, like the Nibelungen Lied and like Beowulf, but in terms of just a pure good old bit of verse, not so much. And so I just wanted to focus in on The Wasteland. Now, The Wasteland is obviously one of the most famous poems of the 20th century, even amongst, you know, against some of Eliot's later work, like the Four Quartets. The Wasteland is still considered by some to be his absolute masterpiece. And it's very, very easy to see why, even though it is admittedly a very difficult piece of work. But hopefully we can unknot it today as we go through it all bit by bit. It's probably worth just saying a few things about the circumstances that arose to create this poem in the first place as well. Because The Wasteland, as I'm sure it won't surprise you to hear, was written by Eliot at a time when he was really living through a personal low in his life. He was immensely overworked at his job at Lloyds Bank and took 3 months off. He also was dealing with a great amount of stress and dysfunction within his marriage with his wife Vivian. And even though she helped him somewhat with this poem and in working on it, he's quoted as saying that basically their marriage is what rose to his state of mind that gave birth to The Wasteland. So it's a very, very personal poem of his. It's very, very emotive. But also what's more as well, it's not simply an allegory for Eliot's own life. There's a great amount that it has to say about modernity, about individuality, about the lost generation, and about Western civilization. It makes for very, very rich reading, and it's a poem that in particular you really profit from reading over it again and again, because it's packed with intertextuality and just references to just so many other works by famous writers from the Western canon, all the way from classical antiquity to contemporaries of Eliot's own time. And I'll go on to explain more what I think Eliot was trying to achieve with that later on when we talk about the analysis. It's also just worth adding that if it weren't for the contributions of Ezra Pound, The Wasteland wouldn't exist in its current form. Ezra Pound was also a fellow American that moved to England, much like Eliot, and he was responsible for cutting the poem down to less than half of its original size, from over 1,000 lines to about 434, as the poem finds itself in its own complete version now. So keeping at the forefront of our minds the conditions of isolation and insomnia and mental instability that Eliot was writing under, we can begin to explore The Wasteland and all of the references and philosophy behind the work. April is the cruelest month, breeding lilacs out of the dead land, mixing memory and desire, stirring dull roots with spring rain. Winter kept us warm, covering earth in forgetful snow, feeding a little life with dried tubers. Summer surprised us, coming over the Starnbergersee with a shower of rain. We stopped in the colonnade and went on in sunlight, into the Hofgarten, and drank coffee, and talked for an hour. Binge kein Russen, stamm aus Litten echt Deutsch. And when we were children, staying at the Archduke's, my cousin's, he took me out on the sled. And I was frightened. He said, Marie, Marie, hold on tight. And down we went. In the mountains, there you feel free. I read much of the night and go south in the winter. What are the roots that clutch? What branches grow out of this stony rubbish? Son of man, you cannot say or guess, for you know only a heap of broken images, where the sun beats, and the dead tree gives no shelter, the cricket no relief, and the dry stone no sound of water, only there is shadow under this red rock. Come in under the shadow of this red rock, and I will show you something different from either. Your shadow at morning striding behind you, or your shadow at evening rising to meet you. I will show you fear in a handful of dust. Fisch fährt der Wind, der Heimat zu, mein Irish Kind, wo weilst du? You gave me hyacinths first a year ago. They called me the hyacinth girl. Yet when we came back, late from the hyacinth garden, your arms full and your hair wet, I could not speak and my eyes failed. I was neither living nor dead, and I knew nothing, looking into the heart of light, the silence. O Dundria das Meer. Madame Sesostris, famous clairvoyant, had a bad cold. Nevertheless, is known to be the wisest woman in Europe with a wicked pack of cards. Here, said she, is your card, the drowned Phoenician sailor. Those are pearls that were his eyes. Look, here is Belladonna, the lady of the rocks, the lady of situations. Here is a man with three staves, and here the wheel, and here is a one-eyed merchant, and this card, which is blank, is something he carries on his back, which I am forbidden to see. I do not find the hanged man. Fear death by water. I see crowds of people walking round in a ring. Thank you. If you see dear Mrs. Ecatone, tell her I bring the horoscope myself. One must be so careful these days. Unreal city. Under the brown fog of a winter dawn, a crowd flowed over London Bridge. So many. I had not thought death had undone so many. Sighs, short and infrequent, were exhaled, and each man fixed his eyes before his feet. Flowed up the hill and down King William Street, to where St. Mary Woolnoth kept the hours with a dead sound on the final stroke of nine. There I saw one I knew, and stopped him, crying, Stetson, you who were with me in the ships at Mylae, that corpse you planted last year in your garden, has it begun to sprout? Will it bloom this year? Or has the sudden frost disturbed its bed? Oh, keep the dog far hence, that's friend to men, or with his nails he'll dig it up again. You, hypocrite, lecteur, mon saint bombrer, mon frère. The chair she sat in, like a burnished throne, glowed on the marble where the glass, held up by standards wrought with fruited vines, from which a golden cupidon peeped out. Another hid his eyes behind his wing, doubled the flames of seven-branched candelabra, reflecting light upon the table as the glitter of her jewels rose to meet it, from satin cases poured in rich profusion. In vials of ivory and coloured glass unstoppered, lurked her strange synthetic perfumes, unguent, powdered, or liquid, troubled, confused, and drowned the sense in odours, stirred by the air that freshened from the window. These ascended in fattening the prolonged candle flames, flung their smoke into the liquaria, stirring the pattern on the coffered ceiling. Huge seawood fed with copper, burned green and orange, framed by the coloured stone, in which sad light a carved dolphin swam. Above the antique mantle was displayed, as though a window gave upon the sylvan scene, the change of Philomel, by the barbarous king so rudely forced, yet there the nightingale filled all the desert with inviolable voice. And still she cried, and still the world pursues, jug, jug, to dirty ears. and other withered stumps of time were told upon the walls. Staring forms leaned out, leaning, hushing the room enclosed. Footsteps shuffled on the stair. Under the firelight, under the brush, her hair spread out in fiery points, glowed into words, then would be savagely still.
My nerves are bad tonight. Yes, bad. Stay with me. Speak to me. Why do you never speak? Speak. What are you thinking of?
What thinking?
What? I never know what you are thinking. Think!
I think we are in Rat's Alley, where the dead men lost their bones.
What is that noise?
The wind under the door.
What is that noise now? What is the wind doing?
Nothing, again, nothing.
Do you know nothing? Do you see nothing? Do you remember nothing?
I remember those are pearls that were his eyes.
Are you alive or not? Is there nothing in your head?
Oh, 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 that Shakespearean rag. It's so elegant, so intelligent.
What shall I do now? What shall I do? I shall rush out as I am and walk the street with my hair down so. What shall we do tomorrow? What shall we ever do?
The hot water at 10, and if it rains, a closed car at 4, and we shall play a game of chess, pressing lidless eyes and waiting for a knock upon the door.
When Lil's husband got demobbed, I said, I didn't mince my words, I said to her myself,
hurry up please, it's time.
Now Albert's coming back, make yourself a bit smart. He'll want to know what you done with that money he gave you to get yourself some teeth. He did, I was there. You have them all out, Lil, and get a nice set, he said. I swear, I can't bear to look at you. And no more can't I said, and think of poor Albert. He's been in the army 4 years, he wants a good time. And if you don't give it him, there's others will, I said. Oh, is there, she said. Something of that, I said. Then I'll know who to thank, she said, and gave me a straight look.
Hurry up, please, it's time.
If you don't like it, you can get on with it, I said. Others can pick and choose if you can't. But if Albert makes off, it won't be for lack of telling. You ought to be ashamed, I said, to look so antique. And here only 31. I can't help it, she said, pulling a long face. It's them pills I took to bring it off, she said. She's had 5 already and nearly died of young George. The chemist said it would be all right, but I've never been the same. You are a proper fool, I said. Well, if Albert won't leave you alone, there it is, I said. What you get married for if you don't want children?
Hurry up, please, it's time.
Well, that Sunday Albert was home. They had a hot gammon and they asked me in to dinner to get the beauty of it up.
Hurry up, please, it's time. Hurry up, please, it's time.
Good night, Bill. Good night, Lou. Good night, May. Good night. Ta-da. Good night. Good night.
Good night, ladies. Good night, sweet ladies. Good night. Good night. The river's tent is broken. The last fingers of leaf clutch and sink into the wet bank. The wind crosses a brown land unheard. The nymphs are departed. Sweet Thames, run softly till I end my song. The river bears no empty bottles, sandwich papers, silk handkerchiefs, cardboard boxes, cigarette ends, or other testimony of summer nights. The nymphs are departed. And their friends, the loitering heirs of city directors, departed, have left no addresses. By the waters of Leman, I sat down and wept. Sweet Thames, run softly till I end my song. Sweet Thames, run softly, for I speak not loud or long. But at my back in the cold blast I hear the rattle of the bones and chuckle spread from ear to ear. A rat crept softly through the vegetation, dragging its slimy belly on the bank. While I was fishing in the dull canal on a winter evening round behind the gas house, musing upon the king my brother's wreck, and on the king my father's death before him, white bodies naked on the low damp ground, and bones cast in a little low dry garret, rattled by the rat's foot only, year to year.
But at my back from time to time, I hear the sound of horns and motors, which shall bring Sweeney to Mrs. Porter in the spring. Oh, the moon shone bright on Mrs. Porter and on her daughter. They wash their feet in soda water. Et au savoir d'enfant, chantons dans la capelle. Twit, 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 jug, 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 jug. So rudely forced, Teru. Unreal city. Under the brown fog of a winter noon, Mr. Eugenides, a Cymaena merchant, unshaven, with a pocket full of currants. CIF London, documents at sight, asked me in demotic French to luncheon at the Cannon Street Hotel, followed by a weekend at the Metropole. I, Tiresias. At the violet hour, when the eyes and back turn upward from the desk, when the human engine waits, like a taxi throbbing, waiting, I, Tiresias, though blind, throbbing between two lives, old man with wrinkled female breasts, can see at the violet hour, the evening hour that strives homewards and brings a sailor home from sea. The typist home at tea time clears her breakfast, lights her stove, and lays out food in tins. Out of the window, perilously spread, her drying combinations touched by the sun's last rays. On the divan are piled, at night her bed, stockings, slippers, camisoles, and stays. I, Tiresias, old man with wrinkled dugs, perceived the scene and foretold the rest. I, too, awaited the expected guest. He, the young man carbuncular, arrives, a small house agent's clerks, with one bold stare. One of the low on whom assurances sit, as a silk hat on the Bradford millionaire. The time is now propitious. As he guesses, the meal is ended. She is bored and tired, endeavours to engage her caresses, which still are unreproved if undesired. Flushed and desired, he assaults at once, exploring hands encounter no defence. His vanity requires no response, and makes a welcome of indifference. And I, Tiresias, have foresuffered, all enacted on this same divan or bed. I, who have sat by Thebes below the wall, and walked among the lowest of the dead, bestows one final patronizing kiss, and gropes his way, finding the stairs unlit. She turns and looks a moment in the glass, hardly aware of her departed lover. Her brain allows only half-formed thought to pass. Well, now that's done. And I'm glad it's over. When lovely women stoops to folly and paces about her room again, alone, she smooths her hair with automatic hand and puts a record on the gramophone. This music crept by me upon the waters and along the Strand, up Queen Victoria Street. Oh, city, city, I can sometimes hear, beside a public bar in Lower Thames Street, the pleasant whining of a mandolin, and a clatter and a chatter from within, where fishermen lounge at noon, where the walls of Magnus Martyr hold inescapable splendour of Ionian white and gold. The river sweats oil and tar, the barges drift with the turning tide, red sails wide, to leeward swing on the heavy spar, the barges wash drifting logs down Greenwich Reach, past the Isle of Dogs. Walla liar, walla liar. Elizabeth and Leicester, beating oars, the stern was formed a gilded shell, red and gold. The brisk swell rippled both shores, southwest wind carried downstream the peal of bells, white towers. Wairaga, gaiar, wairaga, gaiarga. Trains and dusty trees, Highbury bore me, Richmond and Kew undid me. By Richmond I raised my knees supine on the floor of a narrow canoe. My feet are at Moorgate, and my heart under my feet. After the event he wept. He promised a new start. I made no comment. What should I resent? on Moorgate Sands I can connect nothing with nothing. The broken fingernails of dirty hands, my people, humble people who expect nothing. Gah, gah. To Carthage then I came, burning, 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 burning. O Lord, thou pluckest me out, O Lord, thou pluckest, burning. Phlebas the Phoenician, a fortnight dead, forgot the cry of gulls and the deep sea swell and the profit and the loss. A current under sea picked his bones in whispers. As he rose and fell, he passed the stages of his age and youth, entering the whirlpool. Gentile or Jew, O you who turn the wheel and look to windward, consider Phlebas, who was once handsome and tall as you. After the torchlight red on sweaty faces, after the frosty silence in the gardens, after the agony in stony places, the shouting and the crying, prison and palace and reverberation, of thunder of spring over distant mountains, he who was living is now dead. We who were living are now dying, with a little patience. Here is no water, but only rock. Rock and no water, and the sandy road, the road winding above among the mountains, which are mountains of rock without water. If there were water, we could stop and drink. Among the rock, one cannot stop or think. Sweat is dry and feet are in the sand. If there were only water amongst the rock, dead mountain, mouth of carious teeth that cannot spit. Here one can neither stand nor lie nor sit. There is not even silence in the mountains, but dry, sterile thunder without rain. There is not even solitude in the mountains, but red, sullen faces sneer and snarl from doors of mud-cracked houses. If there were water and no rock, if there were rock and also water, and water, a spring, a pool among the rock, if there was a sound of water only, not the cicada and dry grass singing, but sound of water over a rock, where the hermit thrush sings in the pine trees, drip, drop, drip, drop, 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 drop. But there is no water. Who is the third who walks always beside you? When I count, there is only you and I together. But when I look ahead up the white road, there is always another one walking beside you, gliding wrapped in a brown mantle, hooded. I do not know whether a man or a woman, but who is that on the other side of you? What is that sound high in the air, murmur of maternal lamentation? Who are those hooded hordes swarming over endless plains, stumbling in cracked earth, ringed by the flat horizon only? What is the city over the mountains, cracks and reforms and bursts of violent air, falling towers, Jerusalem, Athens, Alexandria, Vienna, London, unreal? A woman drew her long black hair out tight and fiddled whisper music on those strings, and bats with babies' faces in the violet light whistled and beat their wings, and crawled head downward down a blackened wall, and upside down in air were towers, tolling reminiscent bells that kept the hours, and voices singing out of empty cisterns and exhausted wells. In this decayed hole among the mountains, in the faint moonlight, the grass is singing. Over the tumbling graves about the chapel, there is the empty chapel, only the wind's home. It has no windows, and the doors swing. Dry bones can harm no one. Only a cock stood on the roof tree. Cock-o-rico, cock-o-rico. In a flash of lightning, then the damp gust, bringing rain. Ganga was sunken, and the limp leaves waited for rain, while the black clouds gathered far distant over Himavant. The jungle crouched, humped in silence, then stood the thunder. Da! Data, what have we given? My friend, blood shaking my heart, the awful daring of a moment's surrender, which an age of prudence can never retract. By this and this only we have existed, which is not to be found in our obituaries, or in memories draped by the beneficent spider, or under seals broken by the lean solicitor in our empty rooms. Da! Dyadvam, I have heard the key. Turn in the door once and turn only once. We think of the key, each in his prison. Thinking of the key, each confirms a prison. Only at nightfall, ethereal rumours revive for a moment a broken Coriolanus. Da! Damyata, the boat responded. Gaily to the hand expert with sail and oar, the sea was calm, your heart would have responded gaily, when invited, beating obedient to controlling hands. I sat upon the shore, fishing, with the arid plain behind me. Shall I at least set my lands in order? London Bridge is falling down, falling down, falling down.
Pois coscosi nel foco, ciclia fina.
Quando fiem uti, chiedon.
Oh, swallow, swallow.
Réponse de Aquitaine à la tour habile. These fragments I have shorn against my ruins. Why then I'll fit you. Hieronymo's mad again. Data, Dyadvam, Damyata, Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.
Let's just start by talking about the title itself, The Wasteland. What is The Wasteland? Why is this a title? What did Eliot mean by all of this? Now, beyond its very obvious literal presence within the text as a very, very arid climate, chiefly one that has been totally deprived of water, which we'll get back to say nothing of the psychological wasteland that the malaise of modernity had laid on Europe at that time, but also, what's more as well, the fragmentation and numbing of the European mind as it seeks to forget and numb itself to the huge psychological trauma that the First World War had inflicted upon it. What the title The Wasteland is really alluding to, and this will be the first of many other literary references that we're going to talk about as we discuss this, is the fact that The Wasteland is a reference to the anthropological study by Jesse Weston, who was a contemporary of Eliot's, in the book From Ritual to Romance, which is a book studying how the old fertility rituals of the ancient past basically gave birth to the Grail myth of Arthurian legend. So what we're looking at here through Eliot's poem is much like how the Arthurian knights of Camelot had to go on the crest to recover the Grail because the land had become a wasteland, it had become dead, it had become barren. We're also looking with Eliot as well at exploring through poetry how we might metaphorically recover the Grail and rejuvenate a sick and dying continent. To borrow directly from Jessie Weston's book, she says, "Here the hero sets out on his journey with no clear idea of the task before him. He is taking the place of a knight mysteriously slain in his company, but whither he rides and why he does not know, only that the business is important and pressing. From the records of his partial success, we gather that he ought to have inquired concerning the nature of the Grail, and that this inquiry would have resulted in the restoration to fruitfulness of a wasteland, the desolation of which is, in some manner, not clearly explained, nor connected with the death of a knight, whose name and identity are never disclosed. Great is the loss that ye lie thus. 'Tis even the destruction of kingdoms. God grant that ye be avenged, so that the folk be once more joyful, and the land repeopled, which by ye and this sword are wasted and made void. And I think that, much as Jesse explains it there as well, that feeling of directionless, that feeling of just muddling through and not entirely knowing how to move forward, not knowing how to obtain the goal, but simply orientating your mind towards it is the right thing to do anyway. And in doing this, in looking at the Grail, in looking towards the wider collective restoration of a people, of a continent, of a civilization, and away from atomized individualism, you will eventually, in a spiritual sense, live a more fulfilling life than what modernity in Eliot's time was currently having to offer.
If you enjoyed this piece of premium content from the Lotus Eaters, head to our website where you can find more.